What's up? What's up? Thank you for listening to 97.7 K-Wink FM. We were just playing De La Soul's Remove 4-5, which is actually going to happen. I'm Lily.
And I'm Kaylee. And this is Mass Liberation Radio.
We are so happy to have everyone listening again. Thank you for listening to our new time, which is Saturdays at noon. We want to make a couple of announcements because there are so many wonderful things happening with community members right now. One of the newest ones is the Northern Nevada Democratic Socialist organization is doing a good intent drive. Right now, the Rise Shelter is, though they have so many amazing beds and resources, they still are having to turn people down. There's a full wait list. It's the Reno Initiative for Shelter and Equality, and people need tents, sleeping bags, sleeping pads, hand warmers, flashlights, blankets, tarps. New or gently used only, please. We've noticed that sometimes when people are giving away stuff, they just put a bunch of old clothes in a bag and hand them off. That's not really helpful because people still have to go through those things. So please, when you're donating, donate something that you would also use. We need to make sure that our houseless neighbors have shelter right now. There's some great things happening with food, but also shelter is still a problem. One of my very good friends works at Rise, and she says they have people every night that they're turning away. So let's make sure that at the very least, when they turn them away, they'll be able to send them with a sleeping bag and a tent and a little care package for them. I know it's sad, but it's more than sending them away in the cold with nothing. So that's what this donation would be for. It's so that we can make those tent packs for Rise so that they can send people that come in when there's not enough room in the shelter out with some kind of shelter. And then also, who else? Black Wall Street is in Tent City every Saturday. They're also on Wells. That was our last episode. Please donate anything to them. They're doing a backpack drive.
On the 27th, I believe they're doing like warm clothing and blanket drive as well. New group, Biggest Little Free Pantry. They have two locations, 1135 Wilkinson Avenue in Reno and 820 G Street Sparks. They're taking donations as well. They're looking for perishable, non-perishable food and beverages, school supplies, toiletries, and menstrual products. Please check them out on their Instagram page, Biggest Little Free Pantry, Little Free Pantry on Instagram.
Yeah, and, how you doing, Kaylee?
I'm doing all right. It's a rough week.
Is it? Yeah, I mean, it's a good week for me because it's, for some reason, I still get like childhood birthday week excitement. I'm like, oh, it's my birthday, even though it doesn't mean anything at all. Like, to me, it does.
That's great.
I get just a little boost of energy.
Yes.
So this week, for my birthday, I'm asking that people make some kind of community contribution to either the Good Intent Drive or Black Wall Street or Reno Burrito Project, or my charity of choice is Las Vegas Freedom Fund. That goes to bailing out people or helping with legal services or any other services of victims of the carceral system, which is all of us, but some more than others. And that, even though it's called the Vegas Freedom Fund, that is not just for Vegas. It's for us, too. Sometimes people call us to ask for help with bail and things like that. And we refer them to Vegas Freedom Fund, and Leslie gets it settled immediately because she's a queen. We love you, Leslie. So today we have our youngest guests we've ever had on. They're from an organization called Washoe County School District for Change. We have half of the group. We have Mia and Hannah. Hello, ladies.
Hi, how's it going?
Hi.
Good to hear from you. I'm a big fan of both of yours. And then can you shout out your other two members, too?
Yeah, absolutely. So not with us today is our founding member, Isabel Peralta, and then Tara Hartman, who's one of our other core members. We also have some amazing support from Reno High School's Black Student Union and some other groups and individuals across the county. So this is a group effort, and we're here to hopefully represent that.
Great. And then I know when I saw y'all at the school board meeting, I'm sorry, I paused because I was like, there was one today. I was like, I didn't.
Yeah.
I forgot to call in today. Sorry. But there was the Diversify Your Narrative. Is that the other group?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, there's another group as well. So students doing great things. So we just wanted to bring you on because we've had Adrienne Feimster on the show and we talk about how trifling the school district is a lot. So we wanted to hear a little bit about how your group started.
Yeah, we formed back in June amidst all everything that was going on. And we've been hard at work since then. We're basically, said, we're a group of current students and alumni that wanted to create a more inclusive anti-racist education and as well as reform hiring practices within the district.
Cool. And what, before that, what anti-racist education had you received prior?
So as a group, we had received almost no anti-racist education or comprehensive education about traditionally marginalized groups through our school system. So we all felt extremely fortunate to have, whether it was families or teachers outside of school hours or other resources in the community who encouraged us to do that learning on our own. But an example that I've been using this week specifically is I am currently writing a paper on forced assimilation in Indian schools. And through that paper, it was a topic that I chose entirely on my own because I wanted to learn more about it. And I learned about the Stewart Indian School, which forced assimilation on Native American people in Carson City for a long time. And I was just shocked that I had never seen anything about that,
right.
You know, right in my backyard, that kind of trauma and that kind of oppression and cultural genocide, frankly, I never learned about that in school. And that's a rule that we've all sort of found to be true within the group, is that we did not receive any of this education through our district or school system.
Right. And it's funny how on a nation built on oppressing people and genocide, how little we talk about it. It's like, and then this person did this wonderful thing. And then this wonderful thing happened, when it was like much less wonderful things than than I think we all realized growing up in school.
Yeah, I'm a product of the Las Vegas Clark County School District, and it's the same thing. I didn't learn about any of this stuff. Our teachers were pretty terrible. They didn't really know. Like, I had a history teacher that didn't know that the Republican symbol was a elephant and the Democratic symbol was a donkey. He, like, had them backwards.
Oh, no. I remember when I went to school, I went to school in Washoe County for a while. When I went to school in New York City Public School District was the first year that I learned about Juneteenth. And I thought it was new. Mm-hmm. But it's because I had a black history professor, Mr. Dorsley, I'll never forget it, my first black teacher. And I even remember his email address because he was like such a huge impact on my life. So have either of you had people of color as teachers? And if so, has that influenced your perspective?
I don't think I have. I'm trying to recall. And it's really sad that I can't remember. I really don't think I have. It's all been, as for history, it's mostly been white, straight males.
Right.
And it's a pattern we're seeing across the district.
Yes.
Yeah. I'd agree with that. Our district is made up of 56% students of color and only 11% teachers of color. So that's not an isolated incident, that neither Mia nor I have had a teacher of color, at least outside of a language field, like a second language field that we can remember. I mean, that really has an influence on students. And it's like you were saying about, you know, your memory of your first teacher of color, an influential teacher of color, is when the district tells us that policies around teacher expression don't affect students, we just have to second guess that, because we really are impacted by the role models we have and the perspectives that we represent in all parts of our school system.
Right. And that's how we, you know, knock down those negative stereotypes and perspectives when kids, you know, I know that when I am involved in a student, especially like a white student's life, and I know I'm the only person of color in their life growing up over the years, like I know that that kid is going to have, they will shut somebody down if they say some stupid thing about black people or whatever, because they'll be like, oh, that's not true, Miss Lily, you know, like, no, that's not right, you know, and like, it really does matter. That representation really does matter, especially for the kids in those seats.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah, UNR is not much better. We've talked about that too, like, we with Jody, yeah. So, what is it that you want from the school district, and how are you getting it?
Well, we, as I talked about earlier, we want an anti-racist education. And what that entails is like an update of the text and media that we're studying, like textbooks, like what videos we watch. We want to honor the truth of racism and the achievement and sacrifice of people of color. We don't want this to be confined just to history. We want to learn about black people and chemistry and people of color in English and all of that. Because there's so much more to us than just how we've been oppressed.
Right. I always say, like, name four black scientists, you know, when somebody is like, I'm not whatever. I don't think schools are racist. I'm like, oh, okay, well, like, name four black educators or people that are influential that aren't in sports or entertainment. Ready, go. Like,
exactly.
That's pretty hard.
Yeah,
absolutely.
So, yeah.
And then that could lead to the harmful stereotype that, or not stereotype, misconception that there aren't black scientists, and there are. We just don't learn about them.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I think the media portrays that also.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's sorry about that.
No, keep going.
That's definitely our first goal, is the inclusion of stories by and about people of color and LGBT plus people in all classrooms, as Mia was saying, not just English classrooms or history classrooms, but really a full representation that avoids the othering of people of color to a specific month or a specific chapter. So that's the first step. The second that we ask for is the inclusion of specific topics that pertain to traditionally marginalized groups in history curriculum. So that's topics along the lines of Juneteenth, Tulsa, Stonewall, events like that that our teachers can choose not to teach and may choose not to teach if they don't feel they have the resources or the understanding to teach those topics well. So we feel that an understanding and a covering of those topics should be mandatory in our history classrooms, because all three of those and many more that we list in sort of the petitions and literature that we've been releasing are things that we had to learn about on our own. And we think that has serious ramifications for sort of the preservation of institutional racism and white supremacy in our district and our state and our country. And then the third action item that we've been urging the district to act on is the comprehensive and transparent reimagining of their hiring practices to value people of color in education. We think that modeling is really, really important. And obviously, it's important that people of color are given a voice in our education system because of all of the influence that you were talking about. And then we do have a little fourth goal tacked on there, which is to reverse the district's interpretation of their political speech in schools policy, which currently states that LGBT plus pride and support for Black Lives Matter is considered political speech among teachers. And we did successfully push for that to be revised. So that's back at the policy committee as we speak.
Well, good. And I mean, the funny thing is for this, you know, we're a nation of don't talk about religion and politics, and that got us where we are right now, where we have a bunch of people who have no idea what they're talking about because we didn't talk about politics. So, I mean, I think even that is kind of ridiculous. Like, we should absolutely be talking about politics in school, because once you're out of school, you vote. And if you didn't talk about it for the last 12 years, how are you going to vote? You know, it's not
exactly
just by listening to your parents or whatever. And I don't think that's an accident. I do know that there are a lot of schools. I was very disturbed when I found the lack of research that the school board had done when it comes to what other schools are doing, acting as if they had no idea if there were any loopholes, they didn't know of any other schools. So I just wanted to talk about some of those, like the Berkeley School District could be added to this list. But I do remember them saying, well, we're not Berkeley. And it's like, well, why can't we be? We're 3 hours away. we're not that inclusive. Well, we could be, you know. Buffalo Public Schools integrated Black Lives Matter into their guiding principles in its curriculum for their elementary school students. Milwaukee mm-hmm. Public Schools did a Black Lives Matter Week. Indiana's Muncie Community Schools did said on their website that the Black Lives Matter movement must include all of us, and we support our Black, Brown students, teachers, and staff. Georgia's DeKalb School District did a Black Lives Matter Week of Action. The superintendent of Sanford Police of Scarborough Public Schools in Maine apologized for their school policy that prohibits it. The list goes on, and I'm just wondering, why do you think that kind of actual radical change is going to happen, or do you think right now what you're getting is lip service because they are being shaken down a little bit?
Well, frankly, I think what you have shown with all those examples and what we truly believe is that supporting human rights and supporting student identity-based expression and teacher identity-based expression is far from radical, right? So I think that there's definitely this idea that the school board has pushed in the past, and we definitely want to give them space to change that. And they've shown themselves to be quite accommodating to student voice. So we're really excited about that and thankful for that collaboration. But there is this idea that this kind of change, like you said, couldn't happen because it's either radical or political. And we don't think it's either. I mean, Mia and I are both engaged in politics on a personal level. We care about being informed voters when we become voting age, but we also feel that there's nothing political about supporting a student's value. So as we discuss these issues, we've really tried to make it clear, and I think hopefully succeeded in doing that for a lot of members of the board, that you don't have to be a Democrat or a Republican to think that a student of color or an LGBT plus student deserves to have the same level of safety and inclusion and productivity in a learning environment that any other student does.
Right. I agree. And it's almost like every minute that they spend not changing this makes it a little less meaningful when they do. What we talk about a lot when we talk to city officials and county officials is the fact that you can do it. It's that you don't want to. So that's kind of what I'm hearing the most of with them is like, oh, well, we don't know how, or we can't do this. And that's all just a reluctance because it doesn't apply to them and it doesn't really matter to them. What do you think the timeline is for some of this? Like, how long until you escalate?
Okay. Well, I've been in contact with the Board of Trustees. We thank them for passing the resolution, their anti-racist resolution, which came out around a month ago. And that was a big step. But we also it's just words on paper right now. We need to see this action implemented. And I let her know that. It looks like it'll be next year when the policy is when it's actually addressed, which is it's very harmful. It's impacting right. teachers and students right now.
Right.
And it's not okay. It's not something that should be brushed aside.
Right. And that's kind of what I mean when I say lip service. Like, if they're like, okay, we're going to do it next year. Like, that's ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
We have an entire, legislative session coming up. They're going to be dealing with all sorts of other stuff. Like, do it now. Do it for Christmas. Please give us the gift of humanity.
Yeah.
It almost seems like a manipulation tactic. It's like students are going to graduate that are organizing around this and move out of the school, and they're just going to wait until, it dies down. But, I think you guys are doing great work, and it's really beautiful and powerful. I really like the bit where you said you're trying to, it doesn't matter if they're a Democrat or Republican, if you need to have inclusion for Black and brown students. I think Michael Che says it very beautifully. It's not like Black Lives Matter more than you. It's just Black Lives Matter.
Just matter. Yeah, yeah. So, shouldn't be a controversial statement.
Yeah. So I think we're at like a tipping point now in 2020. It's like you're either for or against this. There's like kind of a line drawn in the sand. You know, if you're like against BLM, then you're against Black and brown people. Like right. That's how it's been portrayed. Is there's no like gray area.
There's no wiggle room.
Yes.
For me, there's no wiggle room anymore with anybody. If anyone even, you know, I have friends and I have people who say all lives matter, and those are not the same.
Or blue lives matter.
Oh, God. Kaylee, I went a whole day without hearing it. I wanted to say a little, like, talking about the LGBTQIA plus community. There's a little story, a little anecdote that I have from last year, and I'm pretty sure that it, under this policy, is totally illegal. And since I don't work for a school anymore, too, great. I had a student in seventh grade who is trans, and they started self-binding. Are you aware of what that is? Like when you tape down your female parts to, you know, to flatten the chest. And actually there are binders that you're supposed to use, but obviously, you know, kids can't usually get access to them. An adult needs, you know, to order it on the internet or whatever. But this can be really harmful, if not deadly, sometimes, and cut off circulation. And this student was always super depressed. Like, I could never get the student to smile. It would be my goal of the period every time I have the student to make them smile a little bit or kind of come out of their shell. And then they started talking to me a little bit after school about how their parent wouldn't let them use a binder and wouldn't let them start taking tea or anything, and they were really depressed and wanted to kill themselves. Then one day I noticed cuts on their arms, and I was like, oh, okay, this is, you know, I'm gonna lose this kid, and I don't really care if this is my business anymore. So I talked to the parent and said, here's the deal, like, you're losing your kid, I'm really worried about their livelihood, hear the things. And the parent, actually, who's a medical professional, did agree to get them a binder and to let them start taking hormones. And this was like over a break. When I tell you, when we came back from break, this student was skipping and smiling to, like, into my classroom because the parent let them. They're, you know, they were so happy. Like, my mom's going to let me, you know, she got me a real binder. She's going to let me start taking tea. And I really do feel like that saved that kid's life. And every single thing about that was not legal or okay under this school's principles. And I just wonder, like, how many other kids there are like that don't even know who they could talk to. That they could know who they could talk to if a teacher had, you know, like a rainbow flag in their house or in their room or something like that, you know, knowing that that was a safe space and that's not allowed. You know, I had to seek out, like, I could see the signs, but you'd have to be pretty.
Well, UNR has like the center, you know, at the university. So that's like a safe space for LGBTQIA plus community, Black and brown students, Native students.
Yeah, so do
right,
you,
absolutely.
Do you think that that kind of thing would help? Like, you're able to have clubs, right?
Right. Yeah. So essentially the current policy is that students can create a gay straight alliance or a Black Student Union, for example. Students can express themselves, but teachers are not allowed to express pride in LGBT plus identities or support for Black Lives Matter. And the problem with that is that we know from the Trevor Project that LGBTQ youth report having at least one accepting adult in their lives are 40% less likely to report a suicide attempt in the past year. Like, there are tangible mental health, social, emotional health, and physical safety outcomes to having role models available. So in addition to being oppressive to LGBT plus
teachers and teachers of color, this policy is actively harming our students. And we were glad to see that when we brought that point up, we had 10 students show up to a school board meeting and each speak individually on why this mattered to them. We started to see some change. So like you say, nothing's done till it's written in stone. So we'll keep fighting to make sure that these policies are comprehensive. But I think it's important that we all recognize our communal vested interest in keeping our students alive and healthy.
Right, alive. It's not even like keeping them happy at this point. It's just alive, you know?
Right. And that should not be a radical idea.
No, not at all. I mean, it should be the first thing. We do plenty of other things to try to make sure they're alive, except for make them go to school during a pandemic. So I don't know if that's really on their radar of the most important things. But I wonder, too, whenever I think about this, what kind of training the teachers are going to have? Mm-hmm. Because you can't just say, okay, now we teach this and expect the teachers to know. Like, the teachers need to do a radical self-evaluation as well of their, you know.
Especially if they're straight, white males, most of them. They might need to take some classes on the history of Stonewall and stuff like that.
How have you thought, I'm sure you thought of it because you're brilliant, but have you talked about what kind of, what that would look like as far as teacher trainings before implementing the curriculum?
Well, we know that, I think it's a universally known fact that teachers in school districts are underfunded. We know that teachers already have a lot on their plates, but this is something that that's extremely important, and it shouldn't be brushed aside because teachers don't feel comfortable. They need to learn how to discuss these things.
Right. Well, they need to know the things, right? My concern is kind of like I've taught in schools where all of the teachers are white and they straight up just don't know these things. Like, they would have to spend a semester or two learning themselves. So I'm wondering if we're talking about a full circle issue. It's like we don't have these classes necessary in college to become a teacher to give them the tools to teach this to students who need, you know. It's completely systemic, right? It's from top to bottom.
I was just going to say, I think that's such an important takeaway from all these conversations is that when you're in a country and a state and a district with systemic and institutional racism, you have to address that problem in a systemic and institutional way. We do think that some starting point approaches to teacher training, there are two main things regarding that topic. The first is that we know scientifically that teacher training that is repeated, where teachers do training and then experience using that training in the classroom and then come back and do more training, that's more effective than a one-and-done kind of training. So that's definitely something that we'd be promoting in a legislative context and also just as we continue to push for more inclusive and effective policy around race. And then the second thing is that we know that in a survey-style curriculum, so a curriculum where when teachers run out of time, they can choose what they do and don't teach from a long list, I guess human nature and especially the nature of teachers in a very white district in terms of the teacher body, not the students, is they're going to want to teach what they're comfortable with. And I think you're absolutely right that we need to be giving more and better resources to teachers, but we also need to be writing into curriculum and legislation around curriculum, specifically what events are non-negotiable to be addressed in classes. That's things like Juneteenth, Tulsa, events that really had groundbreaking outcomes for people of color and LGBT plus people and stories that need to be told. So we need to have it written into curriculum that certain topics are necessary to address so that teachers don't necessarily gravitate towards what they feel most comfortable with in a system that's absolutely wrought with institutional racism.
Right. And I wanted to shout out a free resource for teachers that are listening, because I know I feel like once you're a teacher, you're always a teacher. I'm always a teacher in some way. And I do teach like privately and other art stuff. But for other teachers that listen in, there is a really great free resource. It's not like you have to start from scratch. It's the Zinn Project Education. So it's Howard Zinn Ed. He's teaching the people's history, which is what I use to teach my child, because when we moved down to Reno, we started going to a private school that I shall not name actually, that's where Kaylee and I met. We started working together there. We both don't work there now, but they are totally racist. And so I started teaching my kid through the People's History of the United States, the Howard Zinn book, and it's great. There is a website, zinnedproject.org, and you could get teaching materials and all sorts of stuff, and it goes all through all of these great topics and even talks about what some of the students are doing. Like, students are designing a reparations bill on there, and you can read it in full and you can do all of these cool things. So I don't know if you guys have checked that out, but I really recommend the Zinn Project.
Yeah, absolutely. We also like Facing History in Ourselves. That's a free website resource for teachers that includes, I believe, some activities as well as readings, the 1619 Project for older students, and the Tahoe Project has some good resources, although I know that one is a little bit less nationally recognized for teaching like this. I think that's a great point. And step one is giving teachers those resources. Step two is asking them to use them in classrooms, right?
Right. And, you know, I noticed that I thought it was funny that the meeting, I'm sorry, I was just to see those people's faces finally, like after just kind of hearing it, like to be in the same room. It was taking everything in me to not be like, seeing that these people are saying, well, teachers already have so much that they're doing at so many tests. And I thought that was a really great point, because Nevada is almost dead last in education. But one of the bigger proponents of standardized testing, which has been proven over and over again to not help students retain information. So it's almost as if you stopped being a test-based state and started teaching things like this, then not only would you be dead bottom last in education and mental health, you would have students that are learning stuff. But they really want those test scores to be high, but they're not. And so it's like, it would be one thing if this was something that was working and they were saying, well, we're already doing this and it's working. Well, it's not. So let's do something else, right?
Right.
You know, I think that's kind of, I thought that was a little bit ironic that they're like, well, they already have to do so much with the test. And like, I've never met a teacher who's like, gosh, I just love teaching something that revolves around standardized testing. That's totally why I went into teaching.
I was curious, are there any actions and like student activism you're doing other than going to the school board meetings?
Yeah. So we have been, so I'm the secretary of the Black Student Union at Reno High, and we've been working with them to just let the district hear our voices and let them know what we want. We also have student representation on a K-5 textbook selection committee. And so we're reviewing that the textbooks that are up for selection, I think in the first time in almost 15 years when we were getting a new textbook for our elementary schoolers, we're going to be reviewing that and looking at the anti-racism, if there is any, in those books. We also have representation on the Student Advisory Committee, which works directly with the district to recognize student needs and foster collaborative relationships. So we've been very immersed in the district, with the district, in partnership, I guess. Yeah, we've also been working with
or we did work with the district diversity and equity committee, as well as the diversity and equity department, to push for and discuss language within the anti-racism resolution that was passed last month. So it was really exciting that we got to be a part of that process from a policymaking standpoint. And we were glad to see student representation sort of in a collaborative light, as well as one where, as you know, we haven't been afraid to push for change in more of a protest context.
Right.
Yeah, I think we always talk about how taking charge of the narrative is so important and language is so important. So is there like anything really specific? I know you talked about like you want teachers to teach about like Stonewall. We talk a lot about the Black Panther Party. Is that something you've learned in school, or do you want to learn about the Black Panther Party in school?
We don't learn about any of that, and that's really, it's awful. And I did an independent nonfiction book project on Henrietta Lacks, a Black woman whose cells were donated, well, not donated, they were taken from her without her consent or her knowledge. And those cells helped launch vaccines. They helped create the polio vaccine, for example, and saved millions of lives. And this is a Black woman. We don't know anything about her. And it's just, there's so many events that we don't know about because they're being actively erased from the curriculum, essentially.
Right, and that's science. And so, that's not even politics. That's just science. I feel like there's so many, Black contributions to science, and we shouldn't have to wait for Hidden Figures to know about them. You know, there's one thing that I always find is like a little thing that I don't think people always think about is like obstetrics is based on experimenting on Black women's bodies. Like, we would not have Planned Parenthood or, OBGYN advancements without that kind of experimentation, which kind of speaks to the way that we use Black bodies as a commodity still. You know, it's still something that other people own for the advancement of other people. We're still very non-human in a lot of ways. And it's like, you don't have to be picking cotton to be treated like an animal. Like, that's, you know, it's not absolutely just one little thing.
No, absolutely. And I think that's a really great example of sort of the danger of the district presenting, or any district for that matter, presenting racism as something of the past. We were never taught that racism could be institutional or modern. And we really didn't discuss the historical racism and oppression that we've learned about topics like slavery in a modern context. I never learned about differences in the ways that doctors treat people based on the colors of their skin, or differences in opportunity or outcomes in law enforcement. Police violence is something that was never touched upon when I learned about slavery, despite that there's a very clear historical path from slave patrol, for example, to our current law enforcement system. So I think part of the reason that those ideas can be framed as radical is because there's a very intentional and distinct effort nationwide towards the erasure of those modern day contextualizations of racism.
Right. And it's, I think that is really important too, because I always describe my education in Nevada as slavery 1-2, skip a few, Martin Luther King, the end.
Right.
Like Rosa Parks, exactly. Martin Luther King, Obama. Like, that's how it went. And
right.
That is the end. And it's kind of like that. Like, I remember my kid had Martin Luther King Day at that same school. And I asked the kids, who was Martin Luther King Jr.? And, like, I think at the time I was teaching PE or something ridiculous. I just kept asking random kids who, and one of them was like, he freed the slaves. And I remember it being so bizarre because this school said, oh, we have a school on Martin Luther King Jr. Day because we educate the kids about who he was. And I was like, well, I'm not coming to school on that day, and neither is my kid, because we're going to do community service like he would have wanted us to do on this federal holiday that you shouldn't be in school. But, you know, the education that they offered was like, color a picture about him and let a teacher tell you that he freed the slaves. Yeah. I wanted to talk to you about like how there's so much to talk about. But I know that you've been working closely too with Adrienne Feimster, and how that to me, like the way that these two things are not separate. It's just that is a, you know, a very good example of something they could do. And I think it's funny that they're like, oh, we don't know what we could do. Well, you could at least rename this school. You know, that is the easiest thing, actually, that you could do. And there's something right here for you to do, yet we're having to present it as two different action items. Can you tell us a little bit about your work with Adrienne?
Absolutely. So we are fully supportive of Adrienne's school renaming project. So for those people who don't know, I guess, Adrienne Feimster is the granddaughter of Dolores Feimster, the legendary Black civil rights activist from Reno and a counselor at Hugg High School. And the decision to not name Old Hugg High School in her honor, in her legacy, was really one that came out of some racist and corruptive play on the school board. And the reason I say that is because, you know, they originally voted to name it after her, and then they took that vote back, essentially.
And then they said, split it. Like, yeah, they did all sorts of ridiculous things for, you know, for
a
media.
Give it to a white
person. Yeah, for a mediocre rich white lady. No.
I mean, I think the importance of the project, as I understand it, lies in this very symbolic and very important need to represent to our students that we value Black leadership and Black women in our school system and in our community. And so I think Adrienne's project, you know, it's almost funny. Her request is a very reasonable one. She didn't even she didn't even ask for them to overturn it immediately. She said, put it back on the agenda. I have confidence when the people speak again, they'll still be in favor of Dolores Feimster's legacy. So that's something that we support. And I think you're right. It's a good example of something that we hope the district will continue to act within the spirit of their anti-racism resolution on, because it wouldn't cost anything to change that. So
no,
we think it's a good first step, and we think it really does matter. Right, exactly.
It's such an easy fix. Gosh, it's like the easiest PR move ever. Mm-hmm. Like if it were Hollywood, they would have already done it. You know, the easiest thing. And, you know, we've been protesting alongside Adrienne since this summer. Like, get it done, people. We're sick of this. Like, there's other things. We need to move on. Fix it. Like, bring Mother Hugg home. We love Adrienne and we love the work that she's doing. And I think it's so silly that they try to separate the two things when it's just such an easy way to remedy this problem. What do you see happening in, like, for the rest of the year? Do you think that, and I mean like the rest of the school year, do you think that more is going to happen? Do you think we're going to have to keep pushing? How can we help you?
I think it's a yes and. Mia, would you agree with that?
Definitely. I have big hopes for the next, when they finally decide to put to review the policy that's so obstructive and destructive, I guess. But it won't be until next year. And that's the sad thing. It's so easy to fix. I know they had a policy meeting 1 week after the board meeting that decided that they would review it. It was so easy, and they could have just put it on the agenda, but they're pushing it back. And we aren't going to stop fighting. We're so passionate about this. I know so many students and teachers want this change to happen, and so many other changes. I have big hopes, like I said before, with the textbook selection committee. We have a student on there, as well as partnership with the district. There's going to be a student town hall in December addressing racism in the county. And so there's important conversations being made, but we still need to see the action. And I have a good feeling about this year. It's going to be hard, but we have a petition out.
Well, I want to be able to continue showing up for you guys, because this is a matter that's near and dear to my heart. I appreciated We met because you were invited to my child's school. He goes to Tahoe Expedition in Truckee, and they have a very different idea as far as how we talk about these things. They spent a whole semester on human rights. They do every year. and so they had y'all come over and talk with them. What was that like, talking to kids who have received this anti-racist education? Was it interesting for you guys?
It was amazing. I know in the group chat, in the chat on the Zoom call, I saw these little fifth graders were talking about how racism is bad, and it made my whole day because they are getting informed by this. And I actually, this sounds very cliche, but I learned by teaching them.
Yeah.
I was teaching them cookies. Stuff that I hadn't learned. Go ahead.
They're smart cookies.
They are, all of them.
Yeah, well, it's just, it's important to value all kinds of education into. I like how they bring people mm-hmm. from the outside in. They're not trying mm-hmm. to shield their education, Yeah. But it's kind of silly because it's like, how hard would it be for Washoe County School to do that with their fifth grade class?
Exactly. It was a really amazing move for Truckee to have some random high schoolers come in and speak to their students about racism and the effects of colonialism. And it just, and I know some of the, at least one of the children at Truckee, they emailed in a public comment. So they, at a very young age, are already making change. And that just shows the impact that an anti-racist education can have. They're being change makers already.
Oh, yeah. They make petitions. They do all sorts of stuff. It's funny. I mean, not funny. It's cool. Yeah.
We'll definitely link your petition.
I think it's great for them to see. Oh, I'm sorry. Did I cut you off?
No, you're fine. I just was saying we'll definitely link your petition in our Instagram post for this episode. We'll make sure
we
to do that.
We appreciate that. Yeah, the more people involved with that, the merrier. I was just going to say as well with the Truckee or the Tahoe Expedition Academy students, I think it's really an underestimated benefit of that kind of honest and inclusive education, that those students are also being empowered to do activism early. Like our group was lucky enough to sort of find each other through social media and other channels and mm-hmm. begin doing that work in high school. But I mean, I did an interview with one of the Tahoe Expedition Academy kids for their school newspaper a couple weekends ago. And she was asking me a lot of questions that I think like I wouldn't necessarily have thought to ask at that age. And I just think it's really positive to ask students to consider accountability and the impact that they have on their worlds early on. And I think that's going to be, I think it's going to breed a generation of leaders, honestly.
Me too.
Mm-hmm.
Would you like us to follow you on social media? How can people get a hold of you? Cause we want to put it in the show notes when we post it.
And our listeners, so they can support you guys.
Yeah, absolutely. Mia, did you want that?
Sure. So we have Instagram, we have a Twitter. Our Instagram is WCSD4Change.
All right. I think I follow you guys already. Station does. Of course, you're my favorite
kids.
And
then our Twitter is the thing. WCSD for change.
All right, Twitter and Instagram, same thing. Is there any financial contribution that anybody can make? What schools do you guys want to go to? Like, what can we do to help you individually?
Honestly, the main thing right now is showing up to, I mean, we post about this on our social media all the time, so anyone following us gets in the loop, but really showing up to these activism opportunities is the number one thing we're asking for right now. So we don't need your dollars, we just need your voice.
Just your sense. Your SEN. That's so wonderful. Mia and Hannah, thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, and we'll reach out. We'll keep reaching out, and I hope to see more people at the meetings. I am, like, so upset at myself right now that I missed one today, but I'll write a letter still. And we will come to the next one. When is the next school board meeting? Do you know?
It'll be 2 weeks from today at Reno High School.
See you
December
there.
7th.
Yeah, all our listeners, make a public comment, show up. I'm going to follow Washoe County Student school district students for change right now on Instagram and Twitter.
Yeah, let's try to mobilize lots of people for that December 7th meeting. You guys could start writing your letter now. And thank you so much again. We are getting off of an interview with Mia and Hannah. What schools do you guys go to? I'm sorry, we didn't ask that.
I attend Reno High School.
Okay.
And I go to Worcester.
Awesome. Well, we are so happy to have had you. We are Mass Liberation Radio, 97.7 K-Wink.
I'm Kaylee.
And I'm Lily. And we're going to send you out with a Tribe Called Quest Mind Power.